When I was invited to tell this story, I felt I should remind the producers of the words of W.H. Auden, who defined a professor as someone who talks in someone else's sleep. So I hope I don't put you to sleep, but if I do, rest comfortably. None of this material will be on the exam. So I come from across the street, Bloomberg School of Public Health, and I do refugee and disaster work. Did it before I came to Hopkins, do it now. And it's a task that calls upon all your faculties, all at the same time. So my training as a demographer with a little bit of epidemiology and some biostats and some survey methodology and survey design instrumentation gives me some technical skills, I hope, to get on the ground and get busy doing some work that needs to be done often in a conflict or crisis setting and with real speed. But there's other skills that are necessary. A bit of language helps, certainly. Some diplomacy, some cultural sensitivity, and a skill that I think I only practiced imperfectly in college, which I learned I had to use in China and elsewhere in other parts of the world, which was to be able to drink hard, drink long, drink with purpose, and drink with a certain sense of propriety. I went to North Korea, or the China-North Korea border, with a South Korean colleague, and our job was to make friends, build relationships, to get involved with a population of North Korean refugees who were crossing the border. This was in 1998, fleeing famine, fleeing desperate disease and hardship, coming into China where they were not welcomed particularly. They were actually arrested and deported for their pains. The Chinese welcome was not particularly kind. So we had to find out how to make our inroads to build relationships with often very suspicious Chinese officials and even more suspicious North Koreans who would come across the border periodically on junkets of various kinds. And we thought, well, what can we do? What skill could we bring to make these kinds of relationships? And we thought, let's have a dinner party. We'll throw a party and we'll throw down a lot of alcohol and we'll see what happens. So we had hired a banquet room and laid out the tables as one does on in a Korean format on the floor, invited this very distinguished North Korean health official and his entourage, a number of Chinese health officials and colleagues, local counterparts, and we began to toast. Well, the drink of choice when you're drinking ritually in China is something called baijiu, which is white liquor or white lightning, and it's a combination of moonshine and mule milk. And I found a guidebook later in sort of fractured English that had a few injunctions about baijiu. One, it said, do not inhale deeply or your hair will stick up. And the other is, drink when you are told. And the third is, have courage. So the toast went on, and they were flowery and ornate, and we toasted to friendship and to solidarity and fraternity and friendship among nations and Chinese and Koreans and Americans and Chinese and Americans, and our families, and further friendships and deeper collaborations. And it got very soapy and soupy, and I finally thought I'd better ask some questions now before it all goes dark. So I put my question forward to this North Korean health official, and I said, we have heard that there were problems of food shortage in your country and perhaps a rise in infectious disease. Perhaps you would be willing to share some of this information with us. We don't really know much, and you have so much knowledge. And he translated himself from liquid to solid form, from this slouch to ramrod straight, and declaimed the glorious workers' paradise of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea under the eternal sunshine of Kim Il-sung and his son, Kim Jong-il, has defeated hunger, and disease is in the past. And then he sat down and stared stone-faced straight ahead. And the rest of us just looked at our hands and stared at our empty glasses, stunned by this great turd of propaganda that had fallen into the punch bowl of our party. There was nothing really more to do. The festivities were over, and we walked out the door, and I had nothing to account for this long night of drinking except a very real headache in the morning. But I noticed out of the corner of my eye my South Korean colleague huddled in quickly with this North Korean health official. And the colleague related later to me. He said, the man just came up to me and he said, I'm sorry. I had to say those things. And we knew that his The man seated next to him was a party handler, the Korean Workers' Party, whose job it was to follow officials as they went out on these junkets and to report what they said. So the man really had to just offer this lie to us. Had he told the truth, it would have risked his family and his livelihood. I learned even later than that that some of the Chinese colleagues, again, came to my South Korean friend, and they said, "We like that American. We can work with him. He knows our customs, and he drinks so well, he can't be a missionary." So this gave me some pause, because my parents were missionaries in Korea growing up, and I knew the injunctions about public drunkenness. So I offered a small prayer for forgiveness, and in hopes that the ends might justify the means. Our project, I'm happy to say, continues 13 years to this day on the China-North Korea border, and I owe it in some small part to that drinking. And we have learned over the years to modify our behavior, and I hope to mix in more parts edification and fewer parts inebriation. Thank you.